All right, this is the time set for docket number 89183. Justice Pickering is joining us from Las Vegas. Are you all ready to proceed? All right, both sides know obviously that we have 34 total minutes for argument, 17 for each side. The first 2 minutes will be uninterrupted time for you. Do you wish, on behalf of Ms. Engel, to retain any time for rebuttal?
I'd like to reserve 5 minutes, please.
And you can start when you're ready.
May it please the court, Katie Reynolds. I'm joined by Stephen Friskel from the Washoe County Public Defender's Office for Ms. Engel. The plain language and legislative history of NRS 176A-260 indicate that the district court failed to perform an act that was required by law when it refused to set aside Julie Engel's conviction after she successfully completed mental health treatment court, but was unable to pay restitution due to financial hardship. She respectfully requests that this court grant her petition for a writ of mandamus. Shocking no one, anyone with a passing familiarity with the indigent defense system can tell you the vast majority of people that we interact with have been influenced by poverty, substance abuse, mental health, or in many cases, a vicious combination of all three. It's also a sad reality that once a person has made contact with the felony criminal justice system, their life is often set on a trajectory that's hard to break out of. Take a person who's already struggling, incarcerate them, take their job, their housing, and then give them a felony conviction. To put it mildly, this is not a recipe for success. The Nevada legislature recognized this when it originally enacted specialty diversion courts, allowing a path for defendants to get mental health or substance abuse treatment instead of incarceration. It reaffirmed this commitment in 2019 when it expanded the scope of specialty courts and also provided that a defendant who has no prior felonies, who has not previously failed a specialty court, completes drug or mental health court, the district court shall dismiss their conviction. And in Caboo v. 8th Judicial District, this court affirmed last year that shall is mandatory. The district court must dismiss the conviction of a defendant who successfully completes treatment court and fulfills the terms and conditions of probation. This is the picture that Ms. Engel enters. She had no prior felonies. She'd not previously received the opportunity at treatment court. She pled guilty to attempted burglary, was referred to adult drug court, and ultimately transferred to mental health court, where the parties all agree she performed admirably. However, due to financial hardship, she was unable to pay her restitution. That brings us to the question upon which I believe the state and I can agree. Pursuant to NRS 176A-260, when a person who has fulfilled the terms and conditions of their probation and mental health court, the court shall dismiss the conviction. Now, NRS 176A.430 also plainly provides that the failure to pay restitution due to verified financial hardship is not a violation of the terms and conditions. So the question becomes, is somebody who does not violate the terms and conditions of their probation, have they therefore fulfilled the conditions of the terms and probations pursuant to subsection 6? And we submit that Ms. Engel has. The first reason for this is to simply look at a bird's eye view of 176A-260. It anticipates two possible outcomes. The first, subsection 5, a violation of the terms or conditions of probation, in which case the court could revoke, could order further conditions. That didn't happen here. There was no violation. That leaves us with subsection 6, a completion of the terms and conditions. That happened here. And how we absolutely know that happened here is to look at specifically at NRS 176A.840. This is a statutory provision that provides specifically for those defendants who complete specialty court. And the defense, and Ms. Engel would submit that this is a finish line. It's the provisions for early discharge, after which the division is required. It's not a may, but it shall. When a defendant has completed all the conditions set forth in NRS 176A-840, the division shall petition the court for an early discharge.
But counsel, is there any mechanism by which the the restitution would still be enforceable, notwithstanding the dismissal of the charges?
Yes, Justice Lee, and I would submit that there are several mechanisms for that. First, under 176A850, it very plainly provides that upon an honorable discharge from probation, which would occur prior to any set aside in this case, the amount of unpaid restitution constitutes a civil liability arising upon the date of discharge. So that liability arises upon the date of discharge from probation.
But discharge is different from dismissal, right? So if you're honorably discharged, dishonorably discharged, you still presumptively have that judgment for the monetary portion of that. But if it's completely dismissed or set aside, it's as if it never happens. How do you predicate a subsequent confession of judgment, essentially, if there's no judgment, I guess?
I think presumably there would be both, because you would be discharged from probation and then the set-aside would happen. Now, upon that discharge, there is nothing in that statutory language that would prohibit the district court from entering an order of restitution.
But I guess where I'm concerned is, isn't there a ceiling of any aspect of the conviction?
Pursuant to NRS 176A265, there is a ceiling. Yeah. There is a ceiling of records upon a set-aside. However, that statute very plainly contains a good cause provision that the division can petition for good cause for any aspect of the records it believes necessary to remain unsealed. That would appear to, based on its plain language, apply to any order for restitution or, as discussed in briefing, absent from an order of restitution, there's also the district court could absolutely require any defendant as a term and condition of probation to enter a civil confession of judgment. And the set aside or and the carve out to the sealing provision of NRS 176A265 should plainly apply to that as well.
I guess that where we're getting a little just kind of snagged is the confession of judgment. Let's say this is a civil case, there has to be a judgment upon which the confession of judgment is predicated. If that's vacated or set aside, how do we uphold the actual confession of judgment if there's no judgment upon which it can stand? It's completely set aside or vacated.
I think we are asking here that any criminal conviction be set aside.
Mm-hmm.
Restitution. What NRS 176A850 very plainly does is it removes this case from the criminal realm where it currently is and takes it to the civil realm. Any criminal judgment after a defendant has served their sentence, be it prison or probation, it no longer has teeth anyways, aside from the fact of its existence. Somebody can't be sent to prison because of a judgment that has expired. That judgment, after expiration, under that plain language of NRS 176A850, converts into a civil liability. It can exist. And I think that is where the sealing provision of 176A265 and the exception thereto also occurs, that you can acknowledge that there was a judgment, and it was a civil judgment insofar as it related to an award of money.
Are we being somewhat short-sighted in how we view the term judgment? I think we all that have any experience in the criminal realm think of the judgment as just one thing, judgment of conviction, and it lists everything in there. But Chapter 176275 is specifically labeled judgment for fine, administrative assessment, payment of restitution, or repayment of expenses. 176305 lists itself as judgment of imprisonment, and then lays out imprisonment, county jail, incarceration, things like that. It seems to kind of dissect judgment into varying forms, such that arguably maybe could the court enter a judgment just for the restitution amount, not civil confession of judgment, where somebody has to go to, you know, a victim would have to go to court and apply for a civil action in some fashion to enforce something. But could it exist in the criminal judgment just for the monetary amount?
And I would submit that absolutely. And I think that is what that statute leads towards and contemplates. I don't think there is nothing to stop a district court from entering a judgment of conviction. You are sentenced to however many months in the Nevada Department of Corrections, suspended upon the condition that you complete specialty court and the other terms and conditions of probation, which often on their own are their own separate order. There's a judgment of conviction, and then there's a separate order admitting to probation. Sometimes they're combined, and sometimes they're not. And in the same way, I think it would be absolutely valid for the district court, especially when sentencing somebody to specialty court, in the interest of both efficiency and with the view down the road that this might happen, to enter a judgment of conviction and then a separate judgment of restitution. They are related, but that judgment of restitution is a civil liability, and it should absolutely survive that judgment of conviction. I think that can already happen. We're here today over whether or not that dismissal is mandatory under subsection 6. I don't think there has been any argument from the state, and there are absolutely cases in which the district court does have the discretion to, if the district court had exercised its discretion and had chosen to set aside Ms. Engel's conviction. I don't think there's any argument that the district court would have also had the discretion to separately enter that judgment of restitution to ensure that the victims in this case were made whole in the civil realm. And I would submit that absolutely does comply with Marcy's Law. Marcy's Law certainly provides a right to, or a statement that victims have a right to the timely payment of restitution, but that can be in the civil realm. Marcy's Law does not establish debtor's prison.
So, Ms. Reynolds, would you address under 176A.850 sub 1, in the context of talking about entitlement to an honorable discharge, seems to suggest that the has fulfilled the conditions of probation is a separate category of people than under sub 1C, which is fitness for honorable discharge, but due to economic hardship, unable to make restitution, right? That seems like fulfilling the conditions is a separate category than those who can't pay restitution because of economic hardship. In contrast, 176A.266 just has the fulfillment category, which is what you have to show to get dismissal. So if your client hasn't paid the restitution because of economic hardship, I'm back to, have they fulfilled the conditions, or is that a separate category of people?
I think the most important thing to take note of is that NRS 176A.850 applies to all probationers, Anybody who is on probation. NRS 176A.840, which is actually contemplated in subsection B of 850, because somebody who is recommended for early discharge pursuant to 840 could not have fulfilled the conditions of probation for the entire period thereof. Right. So I think the true finish line for specialty court is 176A.840, and I would reserve the remainder of my time.
Thank you.
Before you do, I want to follow up on Justice Kadish's question that she just asked. And that is, it does seem to me that the statutes, 176A.260 and 176A.850, are distinguishing between honorable discharge and meeting the terms and conditions. And those were obligated to construe statutes as a whole, so the words mean the same thing in the different sections of the same chapter. And I'm struggling to not read 260 as requiring fulfillment of the terms and conditions, which under 850, it's quite clear they're distinguishing between somebody who has fulfilled all the terms and conditions versus somebody who's fulfilled all but the restitution and who by economic hardship may nonetheless be eligible for honorable discharge. Could you address how we deal with that from a statutory interpretation position?
From that position of statutory interpretation, I would say first that, again, sub A does apply to somebody who's fulfilled the conditions of probation for the entire period thereof. Certainly under the plain language, they would be entitled to a set-aside. But also, I don't think there is any way to make an argument that somebody under subsection B, someone who is recommended for earlier discharge by the division, also would not be entitled to that set-aside of conviction pursuant to subsection 6, especially when you're faced with that language of NRS 176A840, which applies specifically to those people who have completed mental health or specialty court and what they need to do to qualify for an early discharge. I think it would be an absurd result to say that somebody is only entitled to a set-aside if to say that somebody could complete mental health court, fulfill all the terms and conditions, and say they did pay their restitution and they were recommended for early discharge. I think it would defy the whole point of specialty court to say that they weren't also entitled to an early discharge.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. We'll add a 1 minute to the rebuttal time and 1 minute to respondents' time as well. But before you start, we had some problems yesterday. So, Justice Pickering, is the audio working without problem? Yeah? Okay, good. All right, you can go ahead. Thank you.
Good morning. Excuse me. May it please the court, my name is Kevin Naughton from the Washoe County District Attorney's Office. I represent the state of Nevada in this petition. There are really three main points that I'd like to emphasize in my argument here this morning. And the first and most important of those is that the plain language of NRS 176A.260 is what should control the court's analysis in this case. And the language of that statute is very clear. There is one way for a participant in mental health court or these other treatment programs to obtain the dismissal and discharge as contemplated by that statute, and that's upon fulfillment of the terms and conditions. NRS 176A430 requires a district court, when it is placing somebody on probation or probation-like terms, to impose restitution as a term and condition of that order of that probation. In this case, Ms. Engel was ordered to pay restitution. She didn't do it. She didn't satisfy. She didn't fulfill those terms and conditions. And so, therefore, she doesn't qualify for that discharge, dismissal, and set aside as contemplated by Section 260. Secondly, the other rules and conventions of statutory interpretation warrant a similar result. When we read these statutes in harmony with one another, looking at 176A850, subsection 1, and the three categories of probationers identified there, reading that harmoniously with the language that's used in 260, in addition to the variations in language, I think shows the legislature intended different results for individuals who have fulfilled the terms and conditions of their probation from those who have otherwise satisfied the terms but haven't been able to fulfill in terms of being able to pay their fines, fees, and restitution due to economic hardship. And then finally, I would just point out that the posture of this case is before this court on a petition for writ of mandamus. That is used to control mandatory actions by the district court as well as to control manifest abuses of discretion. In this case, it's our position that Judge Hardy at the district court applied the plain and unambiguous language of that statute. Therefore, there was no clearly erroneous interpretation or application, and so writ relief is not appropriate in this circumstance.
Mr. Naughton, do you agree it was the court erred in granting a dishonorable discharge?
Absolutely,
about specialty court, so we're all on the same page. Should have been an honorable discharge.
Absolutely, Your Honor. We pointed that out in our answering brief. That was going to be my final ask of the court here today, is that if you accept the state's position to remand this with instructions to vacate the dishonorable discharge and grant that honorable discharge, like that's contemplated by 176A, 840 for that early honorable discharge, and 850, certainly Ms. Engel seems entitled to that. We do object to the dismissal, discharge, and immediate set-aside of the judgment of conviction in this case based upon her failure to repay restitution.
But Mr. Naughton, is the court, in terms of a specialty court dismissal, is it the state's position that neither fines nor fees nor restitution, well, let's take restitution out, fines or fees, does the court have any ability to waive those and have somebody still successfully complete specialty court?
I believe it does, and I believe that's what we saw happen in this case. I think before the case was returned to Judge Hardy, there was an indication in the record that the mental health court had effectively found that Ms. Engel had that financial hardship and she was unable to accommodate to pay those fees to the division and for the specialty court programs. And so there is a separate mechanism for waiving those sort of court fees, the administrative fees, when appropriate. But restitution is not something that can be waived under the statutes. And so because restitution is separate, restitution is an ongoing condition. Her failure to pay that, I think, controls the analysis in this particular instance.
And then if we look at to the extent that there's ambiguity in the statutes and we're trying to apply the whole text canon by looking at the different component parts, why wouldn't we apply the rule of lenity where we would say not being in violation of the restitution probation term is functionally equivalent to fulfilling that term if we apply the rule of lenity?
And so, Your Honor, I think we only get to the rule of lenity when there is that ambiguity remaining in the statute. It's the state's position in this case that the statutory language is very clear. It requires fulfillment of the terms and conditions, and because that didn't happen in this case, we don't even get to the point of having to look at the rule of lenity. Additionally, in Williams, which is a 2017 case issued by this court, the court compared contrasting language between statutes and determined that when there is contrasting language used by the legislature between statutes, we have to assume that they meant a different result to occur from that difference in language. In this case, it's our position that 260 only uses that language about fulfillment of terms and conditions. There is one mechanism in order to obtain that discharge and dismissal, whereas 850 subsection 1, A through C, identifies three separate groups separated by or under that disjunctive analysis. And so the group that's identified in subsection 1A, probationers who fulfill their terms and conditions, is a separate group from those probationers who have otherwise honorably, otherwise successfully completed honorably the terms of their condition, the terms and conditions of their probation, but have been unable to fulfill their restitution obligation because of their financial hardship.
Mr. Naughton, then, how is it? There's a specific statute that provides that if you haven't paid the restitution because of financial hardship that's established to the satisfaction of the court, then you haven't violated the terms and conditions. So if we therefore conclude, I don't think there's any dispute Ms. Engel had those hardships and was unable to pay the restitution, if she hasn't violated the terms and conditions, how has she not fulfilled the terms and conditions? I feel like we're Alice in Wonderland sometimes.
Your Honor, I think our position is there's a distinction between a violation and fulfillment. Violation is effectively a negative condition. It's failure to do something. It's disobeying one of those specific orders of the court, whereas fulfillment requires a sort of positive contribution from that person. And there's a difference between being unable to positively contribute and actually violating.
And
one
so,
of those
like, why should somebody who has gone through the specialty court program, which we all know is not easy to successfully complete, but because of financial hardship established to the satisfaction of the court, can't pay the restitution, why should that person continue to have a felony on their record that will interfere with their life going forward, where someone who has the financial means will not have that going forward? How do you square that?
I think it's it's contemplated within the statutes. It was set up by our legislature, and I think it really places the emphasis on if you want that discharge and dismissal, this is a contract effectively between you and the court, you and the state, that we expect that you are going to adhere to all of those terms and conditions and fully complete them in order to obtain that immediate benefit.
Well, doesn't that essentially limit the benefit of specialty court to a certain subsection of people? I mean, going into these in mental health court, veterans court, opposing counsel had indicated, these people are without means in most instances. So it undermines the entire purpose of having a specialty court if you don't have the means to satisfy a gambler's court. You've got hundreds of thousands of dollars in most cases that they're responsible for that they're never going to be paying. So what is the point of participating in specialty court at all?
I think there are other benefits that are attendant with specialty court, Justice Perry-Geary. One of those is the treatment component of it. If Ms. Engel was not in this treatment program, if it wasn't ordered by the district court, effectively she would be left with trying to obtain that treatment on her own. In this scenario, she was able to obtain the benefits that were provided by the specialty court program, work with the specialists there, and have that sort of structure and guidance to get her back on her feet and back on the right path. Additionally, subsection, 176A840 provides for early discharge from probation upon completing the specialty court terms. And so there is a benefit. It's not the same level of benefit as that discharge and dismissal, but there is a benefit for folks who go through these programs, even if they can't obtain that immediate discharge and dismissal. And then finally, we do have the ceiling statutes in NRS Chapter 179, which are available to folks who are not able to obtain that immediate discharge and dismissal. There is a time period on that. However, in this case, it would be 5 years for Ms. Engel on that Category C felony. It pushes it slightly down the road, but she would potentially be eligible if she otherwise satisfied those conditions for sealing of her criminal history at that point in time.
Mr. Naughton, had the specialty court judge at the time converted the remaining restitution to a civil confession of judgment and then granted successful completion of diversion court, would you think that was within his discretion? And would that have been a successful completion such that the matter would have been handled?
Our position is that it would not. It would effectively convert the restitution in the criminal case into a civil obligation. I think that's contemplated under statutory subsection 850, which provides that it's an ongoing civil liability, but it still does not constitute fulfillment of that term. It's effectively shifting it from the criminal side of things to the civil side of things. Additionally, we have a concern under 176A265. That statute provides for the sealing of records immediately upon discharge and dismissal. It also contemplates fulfillment of the terms and conditions, so it has that same limiting language that's in 260. And it provides for sealing of all papers, all documents, all docket entries related to the case that put the person into specialty court.
But if the judge excuses you from the obligation, then you have fulfilled the term. It's not a term anymore. If the judge says, I excuse you from this, how is that even a term?
And, Your Honor, I guess in that scenario, I would suggest that the district court would not have the discretion to excuse somebody from the obligation to pay restitution. I think NRS 176A430 requires that of our district courts. There is an exception.
I'm sorry. I mean, in terms of just successful completion, if there's a means to do a confession of judgment or some other way to satisfy that restitution, Ms. Engel cannot be the first poor person to have gone through specialty court. I struggle to think they've all been denied. Having run a specialty court and having been at least a district judge, many of us were, to not see that this has, other people have been excused of these obligations or they've become civil confessions of judgment. Because it does strain the legislative history, I would think, or it would strain the belief that the legislature intended that only people of means, when there's a finding of a good faith lack of funds, like either you're incapable or you just can't make enough, that the legislature intended only people of means can avail themselves of the benefits, the total benefits of specialty court. You think that was their intention or they just wrote it wrong?
I don't know if that was their intention. I would submit again that distinction in language, it mm-hmm. presumes a distinction in result under Williams. And so because the legislature had that language available to them in 850 subsection 1 to identify these various groups, it's our position that they could have included that same distinction of groups in 260 and provided for that same benefit there. Because they didn't, I think the court is constrained to presume that the legislature intended something different. I would also push back.
Mr. Naughton, in mental health court in particular, and I don't know exactly the composition in Washoe, but I'm very familiar with the one in Clark, a very high percentage of the participants are not able to work because of their mental health conditions. So the best hope for them is that they're not getting arrested and they're not going to the hospital as frequently. Right, that's the goal of the mental health program. They're on disability getting, I don't know, $700 a month. Do you think that the legislature really intended that none of those people could successfully complete the program if they had some amount of restitution?
I can only direct the court to the specific language of the statute. I was hard-pressed to find any legislative history that helps in the statutory interpretation.
Do you think from a policy perspective that that's the right answer?
I don't think from a policy perspective that's likely what they intended. It does seem to me that the legislature is in favor of allowing folks to seal their criminal histories and criminal records whenever possible. However, there are exceptions. In NRS 179, there are exceptions to sealing criminal records and criminal histories in some instances. I think the Nevada statutes also reflect a history of ensuring that victims are made whole. I think that's reflected in Marcy's Law as enacted in our state constitution. And I think that the terms as used in 176A 260 show that...
Yeah, but no one in this case expects the victim is going to be made whole regardless of what we do here today, right? No one expects Ms. Engel is ever going to pay back this restitution based on the discussion at the hearing. I read the transcript, right?
That may very well be the reality of the situation, Your Honor. However, Ms. Engel did have some employment history. It was spotty. She does receive some benefits. You know, what's unreachable for one person today might be obtainable for them in the future if their circumstances change. So I don't know that we can just say, well, Ms. Engel was unable to pay her restitution at this particular moment, so therefore we have to write this off from this point going forward.
We're not trying to make you to be the bad guy, right? I suspect that you would probably agree that anything that works as a detriment to indigent people not being able to get things at other people that may have the money to pay the restitution, that would be a bad thing. So your position seems to be this is more of a legislative thing, that 176 A260 needed to have economic hardship language like 176 A430, so that 176 A266, if it said except as otherwise provided in subsection 8, upon fulfillment of the terms and conditions, or a finding by the district court that a term or condition is excused on economic hardship, then that would allow them to get the dismissal. But absent something like that, the legislative language is what you believe prohibits doing this.
Correct, Your Honor. And I would point out that that those same groups are identified in 851 and also in 840 for folks who complete specialty court programs but have not been able to pay the restitution. And so in the absence of a specific statute or a specific statutory subsection that relates to specialty court completionists with the exception of their restitution obligation, the statute contains that single triggering mechanism, fulfillment of the terms and conditions. Restitution has to be one of those by statute. The failure to do that does not warrant the immediate discharge and dismissal.
Are you aware if there's, I'm sorry, I interrupted your thought, but are you aware whether there's multiple cases that are kind of percolating through the system with issues like this? Do you happen to know?
I'm not personally familiar with any others. I would assume that because this case has reached a stage that if there are other similarly
situated... They're waiting to see what we do?
Absolutely, Your Honor.
Yeah.
And I would expect that other similarly situated defendants would be raising similar type issues.
Mr. Naughton, can't the twin aims of giving somebody the benefit of specialty court and having the ability to for the victims to have an opportunity to seek their restitution both be satisfied? If you have a civil judgment, if you do a civil confession of judgment or something for the restitution, you've secured the victims at least. Should something change in the future and Ms. Engel can pay, they have a judgment that they don't have to renew under some statutes in here, but they have a judgment, and yet give Ms. Engel the criminal benefit of a successful program with a demonstrated inability to during that time period, make these payments.
It's our position that 176A 265 would effectively prevent that because it does provide for that blanket sealing of all documents, pleadings, docket entries related to the specialty court. And as I pointed out, I think in the supplemental briefing regarding the civil confession of judgment, civil confessions of judgment have to be very specific. That way we don't have people just lining up saying, I owe somebody else this amount of money. It would necessarily have to relate back to the criminal case and the order of restitution, and it's our position that under 265 that would also be subject to the sealing requirement.
265 does permit for good cause.
It does. We haven't seen that in this particular case. I don't know what the district court would find in that case, but again, that would result in those records not being sealed and, again, Ms. Engel not receiving that full benefit. It's our position that 265 contains that same triggering language, that same condition, fulfillment of terms and conditions. It wasn't present in this case, and so Ms. Engel cannot avail herself of that full benefit at this point in time. With that, I see that I have 10 seconds left. I would see the remainder of my time.
Thank you.
Thank you. To start with respect to the benefit of Ms. Engel, have you ever been convicted of a felony? I think every person on this bench and in this room has faced that check mark in their lives. To be able to check no, even if you were to run a background check and then somebody would see, well, yes, she does have a civil liability, that is still an immense benefit. And it's a benefit that is being denied to Ms. Engel based solely on her inability to pay restitution and her financial condition. Looking again at NRS 176A265 as a statute, it contemplates two possible outcomes. You violate or you fulfill. And then with respect to NRS 176A850, first of all, and I would ask this court to remember, 850 doesn't specifically relate to the specialty court statutes or to 176A260. It relates to all defendants in the universe of probation and who is entitled to an honorable discharge. And notably, 176A840 does not relate to all probationers. It relates very specifically to those people who have completed a substance abuse or mental health or specialty court program as mandated by the court or division. And it provides what they need to do to be eligible for early discharge. That is clearly, when read together, that is a fulfillment of the terms and conditions of probation. That is what the legislature has given to the division, is a checklist. When somebody has done these things, you must ask the district court for an early discharge. They have fulfilled the terms and conditions of probation. Ms. Engel, in this case, did so. She, as an appellate lawyer, it is unusual to get a record that is as clear as this one. She completed a very difficult and hard program. The only thing that she was unable to do based on her inability to pay and her financial situation was to pay restitution. We would submit in this case the decision of the district court to not set aside her conviction was an abuse of discretion. It was an act required by law. And we would ask that this court grant a petition for a writ of mandamus. Thank you.
How do you address, I know this is going to go over the time, but please answer it, the issue that I raised with counsel about the lack of undue hardship being in the statute that talks about dismissal, with the idea that the legislature knows that they could and should put that in there where appropriate, and they did in the one statute about honorable discharge, but they didn't include anything, any language like that in the dismissal statute, when they talk about fulfilling the terms.
I think the statutory structure itself would speak to that, and then I think they also put that in 176A840 when they gave kind of what those terms, what a successful completion looks like.
So fulfillment is kind of something that the district court could decide if you fulfilled that condition, and maybe that looks different for different people in different situations and how they've addressed something.
Yes, I would submit so, especially given the 850, multiple people in those categories, not just category A would be entitled to a set aside, but category B as well.
Okay. All right, thank you.
Chief Justice, Chief, yes. I have a question as well. I'm okay. Sorry. May I go ahead?
Yes, please.
On 176A430, at the time they're imposing probation or suspension of sentence, there's a provision that the court shall order it unless the court finds that restitution is impracticable. And it, in reading these statutes and trying to harmonize them, I've really two questions about that. One, if this is done at the front end, so restitution is not ordered, then you wouldn't have the problem that we're having here. And I'm wondering the extent to which it's a practice to make this argument at the front end of the specialty court referral.
Thank you, Justice Pickering. I think there is always a hope, especially with specialty court, especially with perhaps substance abuse court versus mental health court, that somebody who may be sentenced right now, who is at the jail, who is incarcerated and is currently unable to pay, One of the goals of specialty court would be that you obtain employment and that you gain some ability to pay restitution. So to the extent that a district court is reluctant to not order restitution at all, I think that is a that is something that is understandable. I think the impracticability provisions may be more useful in a situation where you are about to sentence somebody to life in prison. And then my
second question quickly is whether or not a court can amend its original terms and conditions even after probation is underway to alter the restitution obligation under 430.
I do not know the statute number off the top of my head, but I do know that the district court retains broad discretion throughout the term of probation to modify the terms and conditions of probation.
That's what I thought. Thank you so much.
Thank you.